This is the Veterinary Life Coach Podcast with Dr. Julie Capel, episode number 271. Hey friends, before this interview starts, I just wanted to give you a couple of words of encouragement. On this podcast, my guest and I talk quite a bit about failing the NAVLE, having difficulty getting your license, and many other kinds of failing in vet med. So if you're struggling right now with some sort of failure, if you're studying for the NAVLE, if you're nervous, if you're worried, I just want to encourage you that it's all going to be okay and it's all going to turn out well. Just hang in there, keep studying, and please, please, please ask for help. Get a coach, get a therapist, find a friend that also is struggling with studying or whatever's going on in your life, and get help. There's safety in numbers, there's better mental health in numbers, and we all are part of this big, beautiful profession that I want you all to experience success in. So if you need help from me, you can find me on my website, juliecapel.com or theveterinarylifecoach.com, or just email me at jacapeldvm@gmail.com. Now enjoy this interview with Dr. Ashione. You are going to love her. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Veterinary Life Coach Podcast. If it's your first time here, thank you so much for joining me. This is the podcast where we talk about all things veterinary medicine, self-development, and improving our physical and mental well-being. Today, I have an incredible guest for you. Her name is Dr. Alexandra Ashione. She's a licensed veterinarian in Poland, a non-licensed veterinarian here in the US, and a content creator on Instagram as Veterinary Fair. She's a candidate for ECFVG, and she's going to tell me what that's all about. Welcome to the podcast, Alexandra. I'm so happy to have you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you came on. We're going to have a great time. So the first question I always ask everyone on my podcast is to tell me their veterinary story. So could you share your veterinary story with us?
Absolutely. I think that my story is not really the standard story.
That's good. We like different ones.
So I didn't really have the feeling of wanting to become specifically a veterinarian. I just really wanted to do something with medicine. And I think the reason behind that is that ever since I was a kid, my mom would bring me to work with her. And my mom is a lab analyst in a human hospital. And she raised me by herself. So sometimes, you know, she didn't have anyone to watch me. So she would just bring me to work. And I would be all over the place playing with everything that I could safely.
All the medical supplies, syringes, yes. And things.
Yeah. The syringes, the gloves, the
test. Those are great toys for kids.
Oh, yes. I loved it. I have lots of pictures from the time. And I still remember that it was my biggest dream to have clogs like all the other doctors and nurses.
I'll have to tell you my clog story.
So ever since I was a kid, I wanted to wear those clogs and be one of those people.
Awesome.
So naturally, it was always somewhere in the back of my head, and I always loved science in school, all the, biology, chemistry, not so much, but biology mostly. And I still remember when I was about 15, and that was the moment when in Poland, we have to make a decision on what we want to do in high school, because that sets you up for what university program you will be even able to apply to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do college in Poland. So you have to make that decision pretty early on. And I still remember that I had that conversation about becoming a human physician versus a veterinarian. And I got to say that I did make some valid points at that time. But I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to try to become a human physician. So when it was the time to make all those big decisions, I was following that track, but chemistry was never my strong side. And because of that, I didn't get into medicine in university, but I got into vet school. And at first it was, you know, a failure to me, but then after thinking about it for a little while longer and discussing it with my mom, I realized that, you know, the most important compartment of it, which is medicine itself, the science, it's the same, more or less. So
yeah, it is. It's exactly the same. There's just a lot more to learn in vet med.
Which I did not realize at that time.
Yeah, because you have more species, right?
Yeah, now I think maybe it would have been easier to just, you know, study that chemistry a little bit harder. But I have no regrets about going to vet school and becoming a veterinarian. And until, you know, this day, I really feel passionate about the scientific aspect of it.
So were you an animal person, or did you have to adopt that to become a veterinarian?
So, I mean, obviously I loved animals like every kid, but I didn't have any animals until I was 17.
Oh.
Yeah, I did have a fish, a goldfish that committed. She jumped out of the tank.
Jumped out of the bowl.
Yeah.
Committed suicide, poor thing.
Still sad.
Yeah, that is sad.
So yeah, I did get my dog when I was 17. Past the time when I had already made the decision of pursuing one or the other, the dog actually ended up immigrating with me
nice.
To the US. She just passed away in October.
Ugh.
Yeah, so she was there with me throughout, you know.
So she was your first dog.
Yes, first.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest one to lose in a lot of ways. I mean, I've had multiple dogs in my lifetime, and it's hard to lose all of them, but that very first one is super special.
Yeah, it was my first pet. So losing your first one when you're 30, I'm sure it, you know, hits different.
Oh, but yeah. They're like a child to you.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's a big grief.
Actually, an interesting thing, because you asked about, you know, having pets and leading to vet med. Actually, it was the opposite. Like at some point, I realized that I couldn't relate with cat owners well enough. And I've never had a cat. So I was like, we need to get a cat. So
we need to figure this cat thing out.
Yeah. So it was actually the other way around than usual, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We do that sometimes. We adopt pets just so we can learn how to take care of them so we can relate to the clients, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. So that journey to become a veterinarian was different in a lot of ways because you thought you wanted to be a medical doctor. What do you think about that now? Can you see yourself being a human doctor, or are you like, oh, no way?
Yeah. So funny enough, my husband is a human physician.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I.
He's the one that brought you over here to the US.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, he was still in med school, and I was still in vet school when we met. So I got to take a peek into what his life was like, and seeing him work now. He is almost done with board certification in emergency medicine. Yeah, so he is ER doctor working night shifts. He's seen, you know, the bad, the ugly, and however you say that.
Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yes. Yeah. I don't envy him.
No, you know? That would be a hard, I've thought of that. I'm like, would I have been a good human doctor? Mm-mm. No, I can't imagine it.
Yeah, so I don't regret, but I also appreciated that, you know, when we both are home, I get to listen about it and like still kind of enjoy some aspects of it without enduring like all the stress of it.
Right. And you understand the medicine, which makes for a good conversation, because when he wants to tell you a story, you get it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And vice versa.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me how you went from, did you practice when you were in Poland before you came over here?
So not really. The thing is that I graduated 2 weeks before the first COVID lockdown. So I had
That's
everything.
Really bad timing, right?
Actually, I think it was like the worst and the best thing that could have happened. So I had my internship lined up, but you know, obviously they had to cancel it because they didn't want anyone coming into the clinic that was not essential staff.
Right.
So I ended up staying home for the longest time, but then I started shadowing at one of the clinics when they lift up the lockdown for a bit. But my personal situation at home was not really allowing me to take on a full-time job or anything like that, because at that time, me and my mom had to take care of my dying grandpa. So I had to be able to leave the clinic at any moment. So that doesn't really make you a good, you know,
not a good employee, right?
Employee, yes. Yeah. So I did see a couple patients, you know, but not really like a full on medical workup. I still remember my first patient was a pigeon.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I was a bird, or like, I guess I still am, but I did a lot of birds. So I saw a lot of pigeons.
I don't really know much about pigeons, but that case was just, you know, a typical, you know, your flying rat type of pigeon.
Right.
That got hit by a bicycle in the old town of our city.
Yeah.
And a young girl brought him in. So it was not like, you know, she was going to pay for hospitalization.
Right.
It was more of a like, can you please check him out if it's fine to let him go fly away? And, you know, I did my physical exam to the best of my ability. And I was like, yep, I think he's fine. And, you know, just went outside and watched him fly away. So
that's fun. Well, that's a good outcome. He got to fly.
That was a success. Yeah. Oh,
that's amazing. So now you're here in the U.S., and I understand that that's a challenge. I have other people that I've talked to in the past that are foreign veterinarians, and what a rigmarole that is. So tell me about a little bit about that.
So to say that it's a challenge, I really feel like it's an understatement, because I feel like we have to constantly jump through hoops and fire. But at the same time, you know, I get it that since we didn't attend an American, you know, AVMA recognized school, we didn't have to pay for it. We have to work that little extra hard, you know.
Okay, well, tell me about it, because I don't know anything about the AVMA program and the ECFVG. Yeah. What does that stand for?
Educational Commission for Foreign Veterinary Graduates.
Okay, so that's part of the whole jumping through hoops thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So tell me a little bit about that for people like me that don't know what that's all about.
Okay, so what really matters is whether the school that you went to is recognized by AVMA or not. And if it's not, then you can't really get your veterinary license in the US unless you prove that you are an equal to an AVMA recognized school graduate.
Okay.
And there are two programs. One of them is the one by AVMA, and it's ECFVG, which I am trying to complete. There is another one, it's called PAVE. And to be honest, I don't know too much about it. When I was doing my initial research, I just found out that, first of all, after completing that program, you are not guaranteed to be able to get your veterinary license in all the states. It's not really like a major difference. Like, I think there's like only four or so states that are an exception. Mm-hmm. And also in that program, you have to complete 1 year of an externship at one of the designated vet schools. So it's very competitive.
Right.
And you have to pay a lot of money for that.
Internships as it is. You're competing against the students from here too, right?
I don't think you like compete against them, but you need to be able to find a school that's going to accept you.
Right. Yeah.
Based of what I've been hearing, people struggle with finding a spot. So
makes sense.
But at the same time, you know, I don't know too much about it. I know what I'm doing.
Okay. Tell us about that a little bit.
The program has four steps. I think. Yeah, four. So initially when we sign up, we have to, you know, obviously provide all the transcripts, like all the paperwork, the their office contacts your school to verify everything. And initially you have to pay a little bit of money to even begin the process. Then while they're working on that, you can get started with other steps. And for everyone who went to a school not in the US or any other English speaking country, unless they attended high school in the US, we have to prove our ability to speak English. So we have to take that exam first. Mm-hmm. And that is not so bad. Like, if you know that you will be doing that, I would hope that everyone can speak English well enough to at least, you know, pass the exam.
Pass that. Is it a verbal test?
Oh, it's multiple parts test.
Okay, different
is also part of that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I did the academic IELTS, and I really didn't have any problems with that. But at the same time, like throughout my entire education, I was taking Cambridge certification programs. So that was the easy part.
No big deal.
Yes, that was the easy part.
Right.
And once the office approves the result of that English exam, then you are able to take what I refer to as baby Navli.
Okay.
It's BCSE, and kill me, but I don't remember what's the abbreviation from. It's Basic Clinical and Sciences Exam, I believe.
Okay.
So it has a similar format to Navli. It is a computer-based test that's multiple choice. And a major difference is that it focuses not so much on clinical cases as Navli, more so on basic sciences, just like the name states,
okay,
like physiology, pedophysiology, things like surgical tools, all the little things that right. you need to know if you want to practice and if you right. want to stand a chance at Navli, because
okay.
you're not allowed to sit Navli until you pass BCSE.
Okay. And that something that do they offer that frequently, or does it kind of clash with the Navli?
I mean, it doesn't really clash because you can't move on until you're done with it. But it's not really like they don't offer it like in any like specific windows throughout the year, like with
okay.
Navli.
Right.
It's just that I think it has to be 3 months apart between your attempts.
Oh, okay.
So I was not successful.
If you don't pass it.
Yeah. And I was not successful the first two times.
You took this test.
Yes. So
okay.
I passed it on my third try. So that did take me like almost a year to pass it.
To pass that. And then you have to go on to the Navli. So now you're in that.
Yeah.
I don't want to skip ahead. Is there more?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Keep going then. Tell me. Let me shortcut it. I want to hear the whole thing.
So after you clear BCSE, you're able to take the next two exams. Either Navli, you can go for it, or you can sign up and take the practical exam. Or you can do both at the same time, you know, whatever you choose. So the practical exam, that's a fun one. I'm sorry.
No worries. It happens.
It's a 3 days long exam that costs almost $8,000 and is only held at two places currently in the US. So
what?
It's extremely difficult to find a spot. People set up like 24-hour watch to land a spot. And once you land a spot, you need to wait for that date that is, you know, given to you. So in my case, I booked my exam early December of 2022, and I had to wait almost a year to take it on November 28th, I remember. So even though that it was my first time, I still had to wait almost a year just to take it.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a part about it that's, you know, annoying. It's frustrating because even if you feel ready, you can't take it. So, you know, that builds up the frustration.
Well, and I would think in a lot of ways that it prevents you from, well, the emotional part of it has to be horrible, but it prevents you from retaining all the things you learned, because now you're going, you know, years without being able to practice.
That too.
Like, how do you keep up your skills when they're putting all these roadblocks up for you to pass to get to become licensed?
I mean, you know, there are ways around it, you know, within obviously like legal.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know how to say that. Like within legal limits of, you
right,
know.
Right. You could work under another veterinarian's license as long as they were with you, kind of thing. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's a part of it. But to me, like another big thing is that, you know, nobody that's taken these exams is 20 anymore.
Right.
30. Like right. I am starting to think about maybe starting a family.
Right.
You know, maybe not 100% in my case, but you know, other people my age.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, we still have to pay for all those exams. Can't really make any good money unless, you know,
until you get them passed.
Yeah. Unless you work in a different field. So it's a struggle.
Yeah.
It is. I keep telling myself that, you know, in the end, it's all going to be worth it. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm not sure. Maybe it's a train. Not sure yet. But
yeah. And so after you take this test, that's $8,000 that they only give, you know, very rarely, and it's so hard to get it. You take that and you pass that, right? Did you pass that on your first try?
No. So the pass rate is, so my info might not be entirely true, but based on what I've heard, the pass rate is 25%.
What?
Yeah.
Why? That doesn't make any sense.
So
that's crazy. And so do you have to pay $8,000 again?
No, that depends on how many sections you fail. So like I mentioned, the exam is 3 days long and it consists of 7 sections. It's small animal medicine, food animal practice, equine practice, necropsy, radiology, surgery, and anesthesia. So, you know, personally, I've never been good with cows. So I had to learn all of that pretty much from scratch. But for lots of people, anesthesia and surgery are the portions that are, you know, they either make them or break them.
Yeah.
So personally, I did not pass everything on the first try. I did pass 6 out of 7. So I'm still very happy about my result. I really can't complain. I'm fine.
Right.
I failed anesthesia. So that's things. And I failed it for something silly that I will be mindful of for the rest of my life.
You'll never forget.
I will never forget.
Most of us never forget our big mistakes, right?
That's how you learn. So,
yeah,
you know, I can't complain. I can't complain about it too much because, you know, it's the standard that they set to make sure that we are all good enough to practice, that we're not going to cause any harm, that we're not, you know, people who have no idea how to stick to American standard of practice. So,
right.
For that reason, I really can't be mad about anything. But again, what stings is that I have to wait 8 months to retake just that one section. So that's, you know,
that's disappointing.
It's a waiting game with this entire process.
Right. And then comes the NAVLE.
And then comes the NAVLE, yes.
Okay. And people just got their results of the NAVLE, what, 3 weeks ago?
I was at VMX at the time, so whenever.
Oh, yeah, VMX, we were just there a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, so I know from the bottom of my heart that there's other people out there that didn't pass the NAVLE, but talk to me a little bit about that process, how it's been for you.
So I just failed NAVLE again, and it was my third attempt, so I'm not too thrilled about it. The last time I failed was by 2%, like the 16 points. This time I failed by 1.125%. So, you know, I'm headed in the right direction.
Right. That's a good way to think about it. It's still, I mean, let's just talk about that. Let's just talk about how that feels when you're trying to get this accomplished for your career, because this is a make or break it, right? Yeah. If you don't pass this NAVLE, you can't practice here.
Yep.
Yeah. So talk to the other people out there that have been through this.
We really just have to toughen it out, I feel. You know, there is no way to work around it. Somebody asked me, what are you going to do differently this time? And it really hit home. I was like, okay, yeah, the last three times I mostly focused on what everyone else does, right? The question banks, reviewing, reading books, listening to lectures from those Q banks. Mostly just that. And my boss would constantly tell me, don't do the questions, read the books. So all of that in the back is mostly my study books that are references for the exam. But, you know, being realistic, you can't really read everything and stay focused. Like, that's not really what the exam tests. So this time around, I'm trying to make my own videos on topics, because to my surprise, I keep scoring low in feline medicine. So I decided to focus on that and switch things up a little bit and really get into the nitty gritty details of everything to make sure that, you know, there will be no feline question that will be a surprise to me.
Right.
But other than that, I am sticking to, you know, the beaten path of doing the questions, looking things up on MercVet, which I absolutely love, looking things up in textbooks. Also participating in group chats where you discuss certain questions or, you know, certain topics. Like, I'm trying to think if there is really anything else that you can do to prepare for this exam, but I feel like it's just both broadening your knowledge and getting into the details, really, to make sure that there will be nothing that will come up that, you know, you've never seen before.
Right.
Personally, for me, English is still sometimes an issue, because sometimes there will be one single word in a question that if I don't know it, then I don't know what is the...
It will throw you. Yeah.
Sense of the question. Like, I just recently learned the word to hasten. Hasten?
Hasten. Yeah. Hasten, like hurry. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't
know. And that's not a word people use in everyday talk. Hasten.
Okay. So, you know, the question was like how to hasten something.
And if right. And how would you know what that was? Yeah.
So,
you know. See, that makes me think that there's something about that test that whoever writes it, I don't know, there's probably a committee, but it's like, why would they do that? Especially if they know students like you who are foreign trying to get, you know, using English as your second language, taking this test, that they wouldn't make some accommodation or, you know, because you can't ask, right? Could you raise your hand and say, can you tell me what this word means?
I don't think so. No, I have considered asking for accommodations for my ADHD, but I decided not to. Like, I'm so close. I don't think I need to resort to that. But I don't think that we are eligible to ask for any accommodations just because we are not from here. Because,
right.
Like, the entire point of, at least, you know, that's what I think, of ECFVG, the first two steps, right? They are there to make sure that you do speak the language.
Right, right. Yeah. That's heartbreaking.
So at the same time, it's like, yeah, I should know that. But at the same time, I do know that there is no way for me to know 100% of everything. But, you know.
You can't know every word in the English language.
But you can try.
Well, I think some of the problem with these kind of tests is actual test taking skills. And I learned them when I was in college and veterinary school, because that's how we were tested. those mm-hmm. multiple choice. And there's a skill to that. Like you have to read the question first, figure out what they're looking for before you even start looking at the answers. And I think some of us have a tendency to read the whole question and then read all four answers. And by the time you get to the bottom answer, you're so confused because you just read like three paragraphs. And so I know there's programs out there that teach people how to take tests. But I don't understand why this NAVLE has become such a mountain for veterinarians. There's so many that fail, and it's very discouraging that they have to keep taking it over and over and over again when they're probably going to be lovely doctors.
Yeah. But then, you know, when you look at the statistics, the pass rate is what, like about 90%. So it's not really like,
is it really only 10% fail?
I think so. I haven't checked the latest, but it's anywhere between 87 to like 98% pass rate over the past 3 years. So there's that. But now that you mentioned, you know, that you have been basically trained to take multiple choice tests, most of my exams and tests were oral in vet school.
And it's a whole different skill.
It is. So yeah, maybe I wish that, you know, it was not multiple choice. I actually had a nightmare lately that I was taking NAVLE again, and the final portion of it was to write an essay in German.
What?
I haven't, you know, used that language in years. Okay, I guess it's just gonna have to be Rammstein lyrics.
Oh my gosh.
I gotta do that, it.
Yeah, good thing I didn't have to write in German. I wouldn't even be able to write one word. That's something. Yeah. Well, let's just talk briefly, because I don't want to go on this too long. I want to talk to you about some other things, but let's just talk briefly about the mental part of getting this kind of news time. Because you said this was your third time that you failed.
Yeah.
So, you know, you failed the other test and you have to retake part of that. And now the NAVLE, like, what is that mental, what does that do to you? And how do you get through it?
So the initial few times I would cry, you know, I would sob for a few hours, get a pint of ice cream and, you know, just kind of try to rock myself.
Be sad. Yeah,
it is, you know,
yeah, it's very sad. You have to feel that sadness.
Now, you know, with every consecutive fail, I cry less and less. Eventually, you know, I guess I'm growing a tougher.
It gets easier, right? It gets easier to fail when you failed before.
Yeah, but a sense of grief does kick in because, you know, you had all those hopes and expectations of yourself that, you know, are in a moment met with a bucket of cold water.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that it's important to allow yourself to take a step back, eat that pint of ice cream, which obviously I've had, you know, a lot of, and, you know, just think about what went wrong and how to move on from there, because there is no point to, in my opinion, there is no point to, you know, get right back in the saddle, upset and with unrealistic expectations when you're still in the heat of the moment.
Right.
It does take a few days for, you know, the grief to kind of fade away. And I would really compare it to like the sense of grief.
It absolutely is grief. What you're grieving is your career, right? You're grieving your expectations that you had, that you thought you'd have a job. I mean, I know other veterinarians that have failed and they've had a job lined up. And then you're grieving the salary, you know, that you lost. You're grieving the idea that, you know, people ask you, did you pass? And you have to say no. Like, that's really difficult. There's so much when you're grieving that I think, you know, you just have to understand that it is a process.
It's
not an overnight thing. You can't turn it around right away.
And I think we are also given that time between attempts. I would know all about it now. You know, because when you get the results, you cannot sign up for the next window immediately. Sometimes it has to pass, and you do have the time to think, do I want to take it the next window, or do I want to sit this one out and take it the following window? Personally, I'm just pushing through it. I am a firm believer in short-term memory, so I don't want to lose any of the information.
Yeah, you don't want to lose ground.
Yeah, especially that I've gotten so close. So close yet so far.
Right.
So yeah, I'll be taking it again in April.
So if there's other people out there that are in the same boat with you, what advice would you give them? Eat a pint of ice cream, cry a lot, and get through that, because that's part of the grieving process. But do you have any other words of support? I think part of just hearing that somebody else is going through what you're going through is so valuable. You know, like, I didn't get into vet school till my third try, and I went through the same thing. Like, I cried and I had to wait a whole year and had to apply again and interview again. Like, it's a process, and you don't know when you're going to pass it. You don't know when you're going to get accepted. And it, a lot of that fear of the unknown is so heavy.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I don't really think that I am in a position to tell anyone what to do. Like, I'm not really, you know, in the position to give advice.
Yeah.
But what I can say is that you would be surprised how many people struggle, but they just don't put their name to it online.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. There are a lot. And I know that because I talk to some of them. And they say, well, I'm the only one. I'm, you know, stupid because everybody else passed. I'm like, no, if you look at 10% didn't pass, that's a lot of people.
And this is what I've noticed, which might not be entirely true. It might be, you know, just my bias. But even seeing my husband when he was still in school, people don't talk about their results. They don't compare the results. Right. It's like a hush-hush thing.
Yeah.
It's just pass, fail, and if fail, then just, you know, don't talk about it.
Right.
And when I was in school, we knew everything about each other. We knew everything about others' results. It was not something that was kept quiet.
Right.
Because also that's how we would bond, you know, whenever we would.
Yeah. If you did bad, your other friends would be like, well, I passed this one. And then the next one, they'd help you study more because they know you needed it better because you failed. Or I think there's something good about bonding over those things.
Oh yeah, I call it trauma bonding, and I think it's real. You know,
trauma bonding. I like that. That's a good name.
So this is how I made some of my best friends in vet school, because we all had certain struggles. We would both end up, you know, repeating certain classes, retaking certain tests, seeing each other, you know.
Right.
I'm like, this is how you bond. And I think it does translate to NAVLE and, you know, even ECFVG, because this is how I've also met lots of truly amazing people that are in the same boat. And it's just a matter of reaching out.
Right.
And owning up to it. Yes, I am struggling with it. Hey, I see that you're also doing all of this. Tell me your secrets. Tell me what you're doing.
Right.
You know, just last night, somebody that I've never even seen or talked to just messaged me on Facebook like, hey, I saw that you are retaking your NAVLE again. Do you mind if we ask each other one question a day? And I'm like, sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know your name. It's fine.
Yeah. Start a little study group that's the only way I got through vet school. I swear, if I didn't have my friends, I probably would have never made it, because it was kind of like, we all get together and cram before every test. And, you know, if you didn't know something, your friend would say, okay, here's how I remember it. This is going to be on the test. You have to remember this. And they, you know, I had one friend that made up stories about every disease. So she had these crazy stories, but you'd laugh at her stories, and then you'd remember, you'd be like, oh, that's her crazy story. So yeah, I think that's really valuable. And I think that shame that comes with failure is something that we need to let go of, because everybody fails. Like, that's part of success. Like, if you didn't try hard things, you wouldn't never fail, but we all are doing hard things.
Yeah, I do keep repeating myself that nothing that's worth it comes easy.
Right.
Sometimes I absolutely hate it, But
all right. Yeah, you do, because it is such a discouraging thing. Okay, so let's jump off the subject a little bit and we'll get back to it if we need to. But tell me about the social media thing, because you told me that you're, and I'm fascinated by social media. I like social media, but I try not to spend too much time on it. I actually have a thing on my phone that cuts me off so I don't get sucked in.
Yeah.
But tell me about your social media journey, because you told me you started in Poland, right?
Yeah. So I initially started out with my page in Poland, and it was just really an outlet to vent. And I don't even remember when, but all of a sudden it just blew up. And, you know, it turns out that everybody could, not everybody, lots of people could relate to my struggles in vet school.
Right.
And I would, so I guess this is just my way of coping with stress, to turn everything into a joke. My okay. husband gets tired of it, honestly. Like, it does get annoying. I know it, but, again, this is how I cope. So I would just, you know, turn a lot of my struggles into memes, into, you know, just dark humor, and people relate to that. And, you know, if it helps anyone else to laugh things off, you know,
right.
just to, you know, power through certain things and be like, oh, it's not just me struggling right. with XYZ. And this is a way to turn this into, you know, a joke.
Something silly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been my recipe for success, I guess, you know, just really venting about anything that needed to be talked about. And I've been doing that pretty shamelessly for years now. Like, I actually ended up getting a prize when I was graduating vet school for, you know, my presence on social media. And I was like, really? For venting about
vet school? It's a social media vet school prize.
Yeah. That felt amazing. But yeah, so that's how it all started. And then I met my now husband, who is American, and I knew that down the line I would be moving to the States. And Polish is not really a common language, not in the internet for sure. So I was like, let me think of something that I could continue doing when I move abroad and would be in English. So that's how I started Veterinary Fair, which was, you know, a play on Vanity Fair. And I've been doing that for, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years now, and basically okay. just coping the style that I've been using for years. And right. yes, now that I am a veterinarian, I am trying to take a little different angle. Like, I don't want to just laugh about things and make silly, sometimes stupid and low blow jokes at school things. I am trying to use my presence also to educate as much as I can. Also, because I'm taking all these exams, I do have certain things that I want to put out there. So it's becoming something maybe a little different. I am not entirely sure where it's headed yet. I just recently started making videos for a Navly review. Because not only it's a different thing that I can try to,
yes.
you know, to study, but also I'm hoping that it will help those people who can't afford the premiums with lectures. And,
right.
you know, I gather the information from textbooks, from everything that I can use to really make comprehensive notes. And repeating that, you know, also helps me memorize.
She study, yeah.
Yes.
That's a great idea.
So it's not just memes anymore. It's more education now, definitely. And yeah, I just enjoy doing that, you know?
Yeah, that's fun. I mean, that's how I stumbled across you on Instagram. And I was like, oh, this looks interesting. I'm going to have to get her on the podcast. So what did I not ask you that you want to talk about? That we haven't mentioned yet. We can always do this again. We can come up with more ideas to talk, maybe more about the Navly, or maybe just about, you know, the struggles that younger veterinarians go through in general. But I always ask people if there's something I should ask you that I don't know to ask or that I didn't ask.
I can't really think of anything because I know that you had that list and I think we covered.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell people where they can contact you or find you if they want to follow you, if they don't already, and if you know, they have ideas for you or they want to join your Navoli struggles and studies, yeah. how they can find that information.
So you can find me as Veterinary Fair on, I think, most of social media platforms. I am mostly active on Instagram and I do read my DMs. So if you want to reach me there, then I will eventually get back to you. It might take a while.
Right.
But aside from that, I'm also active on Facebook and there I have groups for Navoli prep. There is also a group for ECFVG candidates. They are all linked in my highlights on Instagram. So that's probably like the best way to...
The best place to find them.
Yes,
okay.
Everything. I think pretty much everything is linked there. And yeah, it's Veterinary Fair across all the platforms.
That's amazing. So I really appreciate this conversation. There's so many more things that we could talk about. So maybe we'll try to get together again at some point, or we'll get a group of people that are struggling with the Navoli or something of that nature. There's just so many more things that we could bring to veterinarians. And I just really appreciate you being on the podcast with me and talking about all these things. And if there's anything that I can do to help you, you'll just have to let me know.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for also providing me with the space to talk about ECFVG and, you know, the struggles of a foreign vet, because I feel like it's a topic that is not widely recognized.
Yeah. And that may be a great idea if we could get other veterinarians that are foreign to talk about that together as a subject. Maybe you could talk some more about that.
Oh, I know exactly the right people.
Yeah. Oh, do you? Okay. Well, let's do that. I'd be happy to have you all on. I've had groups before of, you know, three or four people, and that's always interesting to me. And that may help some other people that are in your same shoes. So that would be great. Okay. Any favorite quotes or books or anything before we close? I like quotes. So sometimes people, if they have a favorite quote, I'll ask them that.
God, the first thing that came to my head was, the KISS method.
Oh, yeah.
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 Keep it simple, stupid.
Okay. I love that.
That's really love it. It's not a quote, but it's something that just really sunk in. And, you know, whenever I start overthinking things, just KISS.
Think about KISS. Yeah. That's great, because that's something that people don't talk about much, but they used to say that a lot. Keep it simple. Yeah. I love that. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, everyone. This is Dr. Alexandra Ascione. Did I say that right? And she is Veterinary Fair on Instagram. So go check her out, and I will have her back on the podcast again, I'm sure. Have a beautiful week, everyone. Bye. Bye, Alexandra.
Bye.